Welcome, everybody, to the Social Impact Journal. I'm Jack Farran, your host, and this is the podcast where I talk to changemakers across the world driving social impact. This week, I have Mike Shanley, who is the CEO of Aid Connect and Connected Consulting, and is also the host of the Aid Market podcast. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's a real pleasure.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. Happy to be here. And thank you for hosting this show and sharing your message and the message of guests with your audience around the world. So I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And I think this episode is something we haven't covered too much over the 35, 37 episodes so far that we've had on the Social Impact Journal. But it's a really important topic in terms of US aid, how it operates, and how listeners can really partner with the organization. And before recording this, I spoke with a number of community-based organizations and local nonprofits, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. And there was a common message that I was receiving about some of the complexities, and it's very difficult to understand how USAID operates. So I think this is a very timely episode, and I know you're the right man to talk about this topic.
Yeah, Jack, that sounds great. And that's really our mission in the aid market as we see it, is to have organizations spend as little time as possible winning the funding and as much time as possible implementing the funding, doing the programmatic work. So I'm very happy to share the insight we've learned over the last decade plus helping organizations around the world work with USAID. For organizations to most efficiently engage with the market. But also, it's never a sales pitch. Everyone should work with USAID. It's not the right fit for everyone. So I think hopefully on this episode, we can talk a bit about what organizations it's not the right fit for, so they know to redirect their resources towards foundations or individual donors.
Awesome. Okay. Maybe let's go from the start. So USAID, what does it stand for and what are its key aims?
Yeah, so USAID is the United States Agency for International Development. It's the largest bilateral agency in the world. They work in a variety of geographies and technical sectors around the world. I've been in the market for 20 years. My experience is not working at USAID. It's working for the USAID implementing partners. So I worked at a firm called Chemonix International. It's one of the largest implementing partners for USAID. So what we really focus on is watching USAID, monitoring their work, and advising clients on how to best engage with them to see where is the overlap with their priorities. One key trend we've seen over the last two decades is an increase in funding. So we've had a variety of different presidential administrations in the United States. Obviously, they then lead policy development while they're in office. The trends has been that the dollar amount has consistently gone up over that 20 years, while the technical sectors, things like climate change or health work, might be emphasized or de-emphasized under certain administrations. What we're talking about here is now a $38+ billion market, according to USAID's most recent report. And what we focus on is helping organizations assess, can they access some of that funding within that market? A couple key trends to remember are, in addition to that funding, the increased funding, is there's been a focus on new partnerships and localization. So focus on USAID has spent a significant amount of funding and resources trying to better understand how they can better engage with local partners and with new partners around the world. So I'm sure we can get into a bit more of that. But one thing with the new partnerships initiative that they launched is they've actually invested millions of dollars in creating resources to make it easier to work with new partners. Just last October, I was in Europe with several USAID staff doing outreach events in London and Geneva to European partners, in addition to the work the USAID missions around the world do to reach out to partners globally. So it's a lot of funding. It is a complex partnering process, but there is an openness and an interest to working with new and local partners.
Great. So you mentioned it's a $38 billion market. So where is the majority of that funding currently going?
Yeah, so probably the largest technical sector is global health. And it does vary each year based on where it goes. A significant amount goes to humanitarian response and conflict and crises around the world. But the technical sectors are everything from environment and climate change, agriculture, education, economic development, and the geographic sectors are global as well. Eurasia, Sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East, Latin America, and Asia. So Even if you're looking at a small piece of it, you know, I'm trying to think of a example of what might be a smaller section, maybe energy work, which some of the other US agencies do more of, you still might be talking about hundreds of millions or a couple billion dollars for one of the smaller pieces of that funding pie.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And how does contracting work? Because I think even for me, I've seen that it can be quite an interesting field to look at.
Yeah. So what we like to advise is that, or recommend to organizations is that think about USAID not as a typical foundation, but as its own market. So how contracting work is not, hey, here's the, I don't know, the Ford Foundation or the Packard Foundation, or let's write a grant. Maybe we get it. Maybe we don't. Okay, we'll write a grant to this foundation. USAID doesn't really work like that practically. What you want to focus on with USAID is there's three P's. Past performance, procurements, and partners. So the first thing with USAID is it is a good fit for scaling up proven solutions. With some exceptions like DIV, it's not a great fit for piloting new or risky ventures. So once you have that proven solution and you want to scale it up across the country or across the region, that's where USAID can be a good fit. So that's first is a past performance. Does your organization have past performance doing the work in the geographic and technical sectors that USAID's funding? The second P is then procurements. So procurements are current projects or upcoming funding opportunities. What are those mechanisms through which the funding will flow to you? So if we're talking about agricultural work in Tanzania, great. USAID works in that area, but that doesn't get you funding. Now you have to look through the market and see where are the contracts, where are the grant opportunities that we can engage on to then get the funding. And then the third P are the partners. So you may be looking at a $100 million agricultural program in Tanzania. That is a large amount of funding. A new partner probably isn't going to, what we say, prime, win that award and lead implementation. So what you might do is build a work with a consortium. So find one of these established large prime NGOs or contracting firms and working with them. The analogy I like to use, USAID is a US government federal agency. So when you're thinking about procurement with them, don't think as much about like a foundation of we're going to write a grant, we might get funding, we might not get funding. Think about an aerospace contract that the US government's going to give out. You need, if it's SpaceX might be the prime. They're going to have all these subcontractors building the engines, building the seats, building the interiors. That's more similar to how a US aid procurement works, where you're going to have the implementing partner and they're going to need the lead implementer, the prime, and they're going to need all these partners to come together to then put a successful consortium together that they propose to the US government. And then USAID, they decide which organization will win the funding and implement the program.
Okay, so you mentioned the three P's. I think they're quite critical here. So the first P is past performance. So imagine I'm a local organization I represent a local organization in Tanzania. So we can, you know, we have the past performance, but then the procurement, you know, where is the opportunities actually being able to see those opportunities and find them? And lastly, partners, how to get in contact, how to actually pitch to those primes. What are some of the best practices that you've seen for local organizations to be able to really get onto those consortiums?
Yeah. So the best thing is understand your past performance. If you are a local organization, you're just working in one country, we'll say Tanzania agriculture. Look at USAID's Tanzania strategy. USAID calls them typically a CDCS. So you can do Tanzania CDCS, USAID, look at that strategy. And then the procurements come out on grants.gov and SAM.gov. You can also look at the USAID business forecast to get a sense of what funding opportunities are out there and then see where you might fit in. In terms of the partners, you then want to look at which partners also have similar experience in those markets and then contact them. One way you can contact them is on LinkedIn. And when you reach out, again, USAID is not a typical, they're not a foundation. So these are clients. So you don't reach out to SpaceX and say, hey, SpaceX, do you have some money you can give us? You reach out to SpaceX and say, hey, SpaceX, here's this aerospace contract coming out. Here is why you need us. We are the only ones that build this technology in the world. putting us on your bid is going to make you, SpaceX, more likely to win this $100 million, $200 million contract. So reaching out to the primes, telling them who you are, what procurement you're interested in, if it's a current project or upcoming opportunity, and then what your value added is, why adding you is going to make it more likely for them to win that project.
Okay, so it's more of a business development approach that you need to be able to sell why your particular organization is adding value to the overall pitch.
That's exactly it, Jack. And also, because of that, most of your resources for this market are going to be on networking, not on proposal writing. You may go years without ever writing a proposal because the prime's probably going to be putting that together. Your time is spent on, as we were talking before this, I'm on the board of SID US, our big annual conference is coming up at the end of the month, going to events like that. You can attend virtually or in person, engaging with any way you can find ways to engage with some of these large prime partners. That's how you build the relationship that you then have in place, the third P, that partner, so that when those procurements come up, you have the contacts to reach out to. You can definitely come to go to DC or do virtual meetings and say, get to know you, Brown Bag. Here's what we do. Great, nice, you know, that's interesting. Let's stay in touch. That doesn't always lead to funding. What typically leads to funding is when you go to the partners and say, here's the specific bid, here's our proposed approach, here's why we're unique, here's our differentiator.
Okay, yeah, great. And the primes, where are the primes located? Is it mainly in the US?
Headquarters, yes, pre-COVID, everyone almost was in the US. And now even the large primes have teams all over the world. And I would say a lot of the large primes now too, yes, they're still in the office, many of them, sometimes on a partial schedule, but a lot of their staff aren't in DC anymore. So they might have key conferences that they'll have everyone come in for. They'll do their meetings around and then everyone works virtually or travels the rest of the time. So if you have the funding and you're looking at coming to DC, come for one of the key conferences or events throughout the year, set up some meetings around there. That's a good way to really accelerate some of the partnering, but a lot of the activity is on LinkedIn too. So if you send a compelling note to a business development manager, director at a prime, and you say, here's why we're different, here's why we're going to help you win, that often is going to get their attention.
Okay. Awesome. So USAID, I know they have a new localization strategy. So just reading out the definition of this. So they define localization as a process of empowering local actors, strengthening local systems, and ensuring that work is aligned to the needs and the wants of local communities through internal changes and adjustments. And I know in November 2021, they pledged that 25% of the agency's funds would be directly going to local organizations by the year 2025. So for yourself, as someone that is really within the system and understands what is going on, are they on track to achieve these goals? What are the latest statistics that you've been seeing?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, and I going back 20 years in the market, there was USAID Forward and various administrations have had different initiatives to try to give more funding to local organizations. To me, it's always interesting, the nuance, maybe it's not even the edge cases, but the nuance of implementing it. What's a local organization? If you're a NGO with a office in Nairobi, full Kenyan staff, but you have a board in London, are you not a local organization now? How much ownership can you have? How much funding can you have? Where and I think getting into the nuance, that's one of the challenges that USAID has, which is defining what's local and then defining what types of funding should count for that. To answer your question in a different way, what we focus on is with our clients is focus on what you can control. Even with localization, with the new partnerships initiative, with USAID's outreach to small businesses, one thing that I've never seen compromise is the past performance. So we haven't seen organizations just because they're local with no relevant experience getting funding. So what we suggest to, you know, talking to your audience, many of them who are leading implementation with these organizations, is focus on the work, focus on the impact. Yes, be aware of the localization priority, which whenever there's a change of administration, probably some of the core tenants will stay there. It'll be rebranded under some other name, but past performance, solid work, and being a well-connected partner, those are things that will stay the same under future administration. So Jack, it doesn't directly answer your question with the numbers. It's more practically, what can an organization do given the uncertainty?
Yeah, because you mentioned, obviously, you said a lot of the primes now have global teams. So I'm sure they have registrations in different countries. So knowing the definition of how USAID, what an actual local organization is, I'm sure is quite challenging.
That's exactly it. If you're an international brand name NGO and you have your office in Peru and you've been there for 20 years, full local staff, bank accounts, pay taxes, all that, are you a local organization? So, and in my conversations off the record with USAID staff, everyone's an individual. There's thousands of people that work there. So everyone kind of has a different opinion too of what should be considered a local organization. I think what it comes down to is even working with local organizations is a mechanism to delivering strong local development impact. So the conversation always comes back to what's the best mechanism to maximize the impact return on even $38 billion isn't an unlimited amount of money on that limited amount of funding.
We were using an example earlier of Tanzania, so let's stick with that. So again, if I'm representing a small local nonprofit organization in Tanzania, we have many other competing priorities with our time. And, you know, maybe not, we don't have the resources to travel to DC to go to these different networking events. So what tips would you have for that organization that is maybe doing amazing work and has, you know, built and ticks the box for past performance in terms of creating those networks and actually being able to reach out? You know, first of all, methods, you mentioned LinkedIn is one, but secondly, maybe people to follow, podcasts, maybe, you know, even the Aid Market podcast as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So from the Aid Market podcast, go take a look at our guests. And if there's a topic that's of interest, that's a great way to hear directly from USAID staff. But let's use the specific example there. So you're the CEO of a Tanzanian NGO based or a Tanzanian NGO working in agriculture. How should you look at the USAID market? If that's all you do and 90, 95, 100% of your funding comes from organizations or donors besides USAID, I would say download the USAID business forecast. That's a free resource from USAID, Google USAID Business Forecast, and just scroll to Tanzania and see what's coming up. Look at the current projects in Tanzania for USAID and see which projects are closing. If there's less than 1 or 2 years on the project, then you want to start looking for the rebid. If there's 3+ years on the project, then I'd say approach the project. Typically, the chief of party is the right person to contact on those projects. It's probably enough to maybe once a quarter set a reminder. Again, to very practically think about how you tactically do this, to check those sources and see if anything new is on there. When you want to then engage with the partners, many of them have staff that will fly to the country. In addition to the program staff, business development staff often fly to the country. So when they come to Dar es Salaam, meet with them there, see if they have recruitment ads out, get to know the partners when they do come to the country. And if your office is not in the capital, when you are in the capital, meet with the USAID staff there. And some of these, you know, maybe a city like Nairobi, more than Dar es Salaam, might have permanent offices from some of these large primes that do include business development staff. So I'd say past performance, you know, Tanzania agriculture, the procurements, check that forecast, check the current projects to see updates on the procurements. And then the partners, just be aware of when you see partner coming to the country. I would say LinkedIn, you want to have your LinkedIn profile good. Picture on there, have it updated, make sure you're checking the messages or at least have notifications on there. Because that can be a great way to engage with the primes and see who is coming to the country.
Yeah, because of course, there's one aspect of meeting the primes and pitching the value, but also primes are going to need to start looking out and seeing which partners we can go with on a particular proposal. So that's when they may go to LinkedIn and start to search on different filters and criteria. Just to have that perspective. So if you're then a prime and you're about to bid on a new contract in Tanzania on agricultural development, what are you looking at in terms of in partnering with local organizations?
Yeah, you're looking for a local organization that knows the ecosystem, knows the political side of it, knows the economic side. I guess it depends on what kind of program, if it's a policy program versus if it's a access to market economic development program. But if you're the prime, you're looking for a partner that adds a value that's complementary to yours. So say you're a large prime and you've never done work in Tanzania, but you've done agricultural work in 10 other sub-Saharan African markets. Great. As the local organization, you might know this prime doesn't have Tanzania country experience. And part of USAID's proposal points is going to be a value, or their valuation is going to be, how much local experience do you have? So seeing where you fit into the primes. And Jack, one thing to add too is, as a local partner, it should not be going to the primes and saying, again, can you please add us to your proposal? It should be going to them and very confidently saying, this is our expertise. This is what we know. And then ask the prime why you should go with them. Hey, there's five other primes bidding against you. Why are you the best? Why do we want to go with you? So make sure it's a balanced conversation too. It's a negotiation in some aspect as well. If you're the prime, you want to know an organization that's going to be good to work with and has the right expertise. And so if you're that local organization, sharing conversations you've had with USAID is great. About, hey, we talked to them. They love this innovation, this approach, this methodology that we implement. Because that's what the primes want to know is, what is USAID thinking? What does USAID want to know here? Or what is USAID looking for as the solution for this program? And then what's the team we need to put together to really propose and deliver to USAID what they're looking for?
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. So you touched very briefly before on DIV, the Development Innovation Ventures. So I know you mentioned a lot of the funding goes towards scaling up existing solutions, but DIV is one of those areas where pilots can be tested. So maybe can you just talk a bit further into what DIV funding looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say that would be a exception or to some of the other things I said, where it's more networking, subcontracting focus. Yes, Jack, there's DIV, Development Innovation Ventures, that and there's a couple other procurements similar to that, where you might actually be writing the proposal. DIV was set up initially to mimic like a VC firm, a venture capital firm, where they have very, early stage, scaling up, different stages of investment, and to make it easier than a large USAID proposal, which can literally be hundreds of pages with all the annexes. I think it's a 3 to 5 page EOI that you submit in the first round of DIV. One thing with it is it's not a huge amount of the USAID's overall portfolio, but of course, a small amount of $38 billion is a large amount of money. And also that's very competitive. The numbers we hear is maybe around 1% or so of applications get through. So what you want to do with DIV, as with any donor, is look at who has won in the past. We see a lot of tech solutions that DIV tends to like. So look at the past recipients. What was the sector they worked in? What was the technology What was the proposed methodology? And then if you have something that seems to fit that, that can be a good time to then apply to DIV. One nice thing is, again, it's a short initial EOI that you would submit. And then if USA likes it, then you can move to the second round. Even for that, though, often you're going to want to put partners together for even your initial DIV proposal. So yeah, it's definitely, we see a lot of tech firms or tech organizations or organizations with tech solutions being successful with DIV. Although again, it is a very competitive procurement process.
For sure. So looking forward to the future of USAID, there's an upcoming US presidential election this year in November. So how do you see the results of that election affecting the future of the agency?
Yeah, obviously we're monitoring that very closely. And what we're looking at is there's two most likely scenarios in the US, depending on which candidate wins, understanding what their priorities might be, how they might see USAID fitting into their foreign policy. Both candidates have been president before, so we have almost four years of data, I guess you could say, for each of them on how they viewed USAID and what their priorities were. So actually, our recent episode that's coming out soon is a conversation with the consulting firm I run, Connected International, talking about what organizations can do. And Jack, everything, just like your localization question, comes down to practically what what can an organization do? I think you look at what were the priorities, if it's Biden, continuation of this, if it's Trump, what were the priorities under his administration for USAID? Like I said, very overall, the trend has consistently been to an increase in funding for USAID, but a change in activity. So climate change activities did not show up in procurements that we saw from under the Trump administration, for example, but there was a lot of agricultural resiliency, health supply chain, private sector development and engagement. We'll probably see an increased engagement with faith-based organizations too. And under a re-election of Biden, it'll probably be a continuation of the current policies, a focus on localization. I think the question would be to Samantha Power, does she choose to continue being administrator for a second term, or does someone else come in as administrator? Obviously, that administrator would then affect the policy. So coming back to really the same answer to localization, do good work, show your efficiency in returning strong impact for the funding, and keep building that network with the prime organizations, or if you're a larger USAID implementing partner, then you want to just have understanding of, you know, who might be the political appointees under either administration and what are their policy preferences.
Mm. For sure, for sure. So quite an interesting few months ahead to observe the USAID market. Mike, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the Social Impact Journal. If our audience wants to reach out to you and learn more about your work, how can they find you?
Thanks, Jack. Best way is on LinkedIn, Mike Shanley, at just send me a LinkedIn message or a connection request, and please follow the Aid Market podcast. Let me know what other topics you're interested in. Our guests are primarily senior USAID staff talking about their policy priorities. We've also had a couple Nobel Peace Prize winners on there, and other senior key stakeholders and players in this aid market. So yeah, Jack, really thanks to you for hosting this important podcast. I really appreciate being a guest on here, and I'm hoping for your audience it was useful to better understand how they can invest their limited resources either in the USAID market, or for some that this was useful in helping them understand that this isn't the right market, that they should focus on other funding sources. So thank you for inviting me on here today.
Thanks, Mike. Speak soon.